Chapter 152. Martin, he had conceived and entered on his plan, and how, beneath her gentleness and patience, he had softened more and more, still more and more beneath the goodness and simplicity, the honor and the manly faith of Tom. And when he spoke of Tom, he said God bless him, and the tears were in his eyes. For he said that Tom, mistrusted and disliked by him at first, had come like summer rain upon his heart, and had disposed it to believe in better things. And Martin took him by the hand, and Mary too, and John, his old friend, stoutly too, and Mark, and Mrs. Lupin, and his sister, little Ruth. And peace of mind, deep, tranquil peace of mind, was in Tom's heart. The old man then related how nobly Mr. Pecksniff had performed the duty in which he stood indebted to society in the matter of Tom's dismissal, and how, having often heard disparagement of Mr. Westlock from Pecksniffian lips, and knowing him to be a friend to Tom, he had used, through his confidential agent and solicitor, that little artifice which had kept him in readiness to receive his unknown friend in London. And he called on Mr. Pecksniff by the name of scoundrel, to remember that there again he had not trapped him to do evil, but that he had done it of his own free will and agency, nay, that he had cautioned him against it. And once again he called on Mr. Pecksniff by the name of hangdog, to remember that when Martin coming home at last, an altered man, had sued for the forgiveness which awaited him, he, Pecksniff, had rejected him in language of his own, and had remorselessly stepped in between him, and the least touch of natural tenderness. For which, apostrophe said the old man, if the bending of my finger would remove a halter from your neck, I wouldn't bend it. Apostrophe, Martin, apostrophe, he added, your rival has not been a dangerous one, but Mrs. Lupin here has played duenna for some weeks. Not so much to watch your love, as to watch her lover. For that ghoul his fertility in finding names for Mr. Pecksniff was astonishing would have crawled into her daily walks otherwise, and polluted the fresh air. What's this? Her hand is trembling strangely. See if you can hold it. Apostrophe, hold it. If he clasped it half as tightly as he did her waist. Well. But it was good in him that even then, in his high fortune and happiness, with her lips nearly printed on his own, and her proud young beauty in his close embrace, he had a hand still left to stretch out to Tom Pinch. Oh, Tom. Dear Tom. I saw you, accidentally, coming here. Forgive me. Apostrophe, forgive. Apostrophe, cried Tom. I'll never forgive you, as long as I live, Martin, if you say another syllable about it. Joy to you both. Joy, my dear fellow, 50,000 times. Apostrophe, joy. There is not a blessing on earth that Tom did not wish them. There is not a blessing on earth that Tom would not have bestowed upon them, if he could. I beg your pardon, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Tapley, stepping forward. But yo was mentionin', just now, a lady of the name of Lupin, sir. Apostrophe, I was, apostrophe returned old Martin, yes, sir. It's a pretty name, sir. Apostrophe, a very good name, apostrophe said Martin. It seems amist a pity, to change such a name into Tapley. Don't it, sir? Apostrophe said Mark. That depends upon the lady. What is her opinion? Apostrophe, why, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Tapley, retiring, with a bow, towards the buxom hostess, her opinion is as the name ain't a change for the better, but the individual may be, and, therefore, if nobody ain't acquainted with no just cause or impediment, etc., the blue dragon will be converted into the jolly Tapley. A sign of my own invention, sir. Worry new, convivial, and expressive. Apostrophe, the whole of these proceedings were so agreeable to Mr. Pecksniff that he stood with his eyes fixed upon the floor and his hands clasping one another alternately, as if a host of penal sentences were being passed upon him. Not only did his figure appear to have shrunk, but his discomfiture seemed to have extended itself even to his dress. His clothes seemed to have grown shabbier, his linen to have turned yellow, his hair to have become lank and frowsy. His very boots looked villainous and dim, as if their gloss had departed with his own. Feeling, rather than seeing, that the old man now pointed to the door, he raised his eyes, picked up his hat, and thus addressed him. "Mr. Chuzzlewit, sir, you have partaken of my hospitality." Apostrophe, and paid for it, apostrophe, he observed. "Thank you. That savors," apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, taking out his pocket handkerchief, "of your old familiar frankness. You have paid for it. I was about to make the remark. You have deceived me, sir. Thank you again. I am glad of it. To see you in the possession of your health and faculties on any terms is, in itself, a sufficient recompense. To have been deceived implies a trusting nature. Mine is a trusting nature. I am thankful for it. I would rather have a trusting nature, do you know, sir, than a doubting one." Apostrophe, apostrophe, here Mr. Pecksniff, with a sad smile, bowed, and wiped his eyes. "There is hardly any person present, Mr. Chuzzlewit," apostrophe said Pecksniff, "by whom I have not been deceived. I have forgiven those persons on the spot. That was my duty, and, of course, I have done it. Whether it was worthy of you to partake of my hospitality, and to act the part you did act in my house, that, sir, is a question which I leave to your own conscience. And your conscience does not acquit you. No, sir, no." Apostrophe, pronouncing these last words in a loud and solemn voice, Mr. Pecksniff was not so absolutely lost in his own fervor as to be unmindful of the expediency of getting a little nearer to the door. "I have been struck this day," apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, "with a walking stick which I have every reason to believe has knobs upon it, on that delicate and exquisite portion of the human anatomy, the brain. Several blows have been inflicted, sir, without a walking stick, upon that tender portion of my frame, my heart. You have mentioned, sir, my being bankrupt in my purse. Yes, sir, I am. By an unfortunate speculation, combined with treachery, I find myself reduced to poverty. At a time, sir, when the child of my bosom is widowed, and affliction and disgrace are in my family." Apostrophe, here Mr. Pecksniff wiped his eyes again, and gave himself two or three little knocks upon the breast, as if he were answering two or three other little knocks from within, given by the tinkling hammer of his conscience, to express "cheer up, my boy." Apostrophe, apostrophe, I know the human mind, although I trust it. That is my weakness. Do I not know, sir? Here he became exceedingly plaintive, and was observed to glance towards Tom Pinch, that my misfortunes bring this treatment on me? Do I not know, sir, that but for them, I never should have heard what I have heard today? Do I not know that in the silence and the solitude of night, a little voice will whisper in your ear, "Mr. Chuzzlewit, this was not well. This was not well, sir. Think of this, sir, if you will have the goodness, remote from the impulses of passion, and apart from the specialities, if I may use that strong remark, of prejudice. And if you ever contemplate the silent tomb, sir, which you will excuse me for entertaining some doubt of your doing, after the conduct into which you have allowed yourself to be betrayed this day, if you ever contemplate the silent tomb, sir, think of me. If you find yourself approaching to the silent tomb, sir, think of me. If you should wish to have anything inscribed upon your silent tomb, sir, let it be, that I, my remorseful sir, that I, the humble individual who has now the honor of reproaching you, forgave you. That I forgave you, when my injuries were fresh, and when my bosom was newly wrung. It may be bitterness to you to hear it now, sir, but you will live to seek a consolation in it. May you find a consolation in it when you want it, sir. Good morning." Apostrophe, with this sublime address, Mr. Pecksniff departed. but the effect of his departure was much impaired by his being immediately afterwards run against and nearly knocked down by a monstrously excited little man in velveteen shorts and a very tall hat, who came bursting up the stairs and straight into the chambers of Mr. Chuzzlewit, as if he were deranged. "Is there anybody here that knows him?" cried the little man. "Is there anybody here that knows him? Oh, my stars, is there anybody here that knows him?" They looked at each other for an explanation, but nobody knew anything more than that here was an excited little man with a very tall hat on, running in and out of the room as hard as he could go, making his single pair of bright blue stockings appear at least a dozen, and constantly repeating in a shrill voice, "Is there anybody here that knows him?" If your brains is not turned topgy-turgy, Mr. Sweetlepipes. Exclaimed another voice, "Hold that there, Nigel of Yorn, I beg you, sir." At the same time Mrs. Gamp was seen in the doorway, out of breath from coming up so many stairs, and panting fearfully, but dropping curtsies to the last. "Excuse the weakness of the man," said Mrs. Gamp, eyeing Mr. Sweetlepipe with great indignation, "and well I might expect it, as I should have knowed, and wishing he was drowned in the Thames afore I had brought him here, which not a blessed hour ago he nearly shaved the nose off from the father of as lovely a family as ever, Mr. Chuzzlewit, was born three sets of twins, and would have done it, only he see it a-going in the glass, and dodged the rager. And never, Mr. Sweetlepipes, I do assure you, sir, did I so well know what a misfortune it was to be acquainted with you, as now I do, which so I say, sir, and I don't deceive you. I ask your pardon, ladies, and gentlemen all," cried the little barber, taking off his hat, "and yours too, Mrs. Gamp. But, he added this half laughing and half crying, "is there anybody here that knows him?" As the barber said these words, a something in top boots, with its head bandaged up, staggered into the room, and began going round and round and round, apparently under the impression that it was walking straight forward. "Look at him!" cried the excited little barber. "Here he is. That'll soon wear off, and then he'll be all right again. He's no more dead than I am. He's all alive and hearty. Ain't you, Bailey?" replied that gentleman. "Look here." Cried the little barber, laughing and crying in the same breath. "When I steady him, he comes all right. There. He's all right now. Nothing's the matter with him now, except that he's a little shook and rather giddy. Is there, Bailey?" said Mr. Bailey. "What, my lovely Sari. There you are. What a boy he is." Cried the tender-hearted Pole, actually sobbing over him. "I never see such a boy. It's all his fun. He's full of it. He shall go into the business along with me. I am determined he shall. We'll make it Sweetlepipe and Bailey. He shall have the sporting branch. What a one he'll be for the matches. And me the shaven. I'll make over the birds to him as soon as ever he's well enough. He shall have the little bullfinch in the shop and all. He's such a boy. I ask your pardon, ladies and gentlemen, but I thought there might be someone here that knowed him." Mrs. Gamp had observed, not without jealousy and scorn, that a favorable impression appeared to exist in behalf of Mr. Sweetlepipe and his young friend, and that she had fallen rather into the background in consequence. She now struggled to the front, therefore, and stated her business. "Which, Mr. Chuzzlewit," she said, "is well beckoning to Mrs. Harris as one sweet infant, though she do not wish it known, in her own family by the mother's side, kept in spirits in a bottle, and that sweet babe she see at Greenwich Fair, a traveling in company with a pink-eyed lady, Prussian dwarf, and livin' skeleton, which judge her feelings, when the barrel organ played, and she was showed her own dear sister's child, the same not being expected from the outside picture, where it was painted quite contrary in a livin' state, a many sizes larger, and performing beautiful upon the harp, which never did that dear child know or do, since breathe it never did, to speak on in this whale. And Mrs. Harris, Mr. Chuzzlewit, has knowed me many year, and can give you information, that the lady which is withered can't do better, and may do worse, than let me wait upon her, which I hope to do. Permitting the sweet faces as I see afore me. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Chuzzlewit. Is that your business? Was this good person paid for the trouble we gave her? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I paid her, sir, apostrophe, returned Mark Tapley, liberal. Apostrophe, the young man's words is true, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, and thank you kindly. Apostrophe, then here we will close our acquaintance, Mrs. Gamp, apostrophe, retorted Mr. Chuzzlewit. And Mr. Sweetlepipe, is that your name? Apostrophe, that is my name, sir, apostrophe, replied Paul, accepting with a profusion of gratitude, some chinking pieces which the old man slipped into his hand. Mr. Sweetlepipe, take as much care of your lady lodger as you can, and give her a word or two of good advice now and then. Such, apostrophe, said old Martin, looking gravely at the astonished Mrs. Gamp, as hinting at the expediency of a little less liquor, and a little more humanity, and a little less regard for herself, and a little more regard for her patients, and perhaps a trifle of additional honesty. Or when Mrs. Gamp gets into trouble, Mr. Sweetlepipe, it had better not be at a time when I am near enough to the Old Bailey to volunteer myself as a witness to her character. Endeavor to impress that upon her at your leisure, if you please. Apostrophe, Mrs. Gamp clasped her hands, turned up her eyes until they were quite invisible, threw back her bonnet for the admission of fresh air to her heated brow, and in the act of saying faintly, less liquor. Sari Gamp bottle on the chimney piece, and let me put my lips to it, when I am so dispatched. Apostrophe, apostrophe, fell into one of the walking swoons, in which pitiable state she was conducted forth by Mr. Sweetlepipe, who, between his two patients, the swooning Mrs. Gamp and the revolving Bailey, had enough to do, poor fellow. The old man looked about him, with a smile, until his eyes rested on Tom Pinch's sister, when he smiled the more. We will all dine here together, apostrophe, he said, and as you and Mary have enough to talk of, Martin, you shall keep house for us until the afternoon, with Mr. and Mrs. Tapley. I must see your lodgings in the meanwhile, Tom. Apostrophe, Tom was quite delighted. So was Ruth. She would go with them. Thank you, my love, apostrophe, said Mr. Chuzzlewit. But I am afraid I must take Tom a little out of the way, on business. Suppose you go on first, my dear? Apostrophe, apostrophe, pretty little Ruth was equally delighted to do that. But not alone, apostrophe, said Martin, not alone. Mr. Westlock, I dare say. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.